Good morning, all. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for the 8th of June, 2022 will come to order. We have a late submitted document, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider the late submission of agenda documents number 22-19-A1, also 22-20-A1 and 22-23-A.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. The first matter on our agenda this morning. Is the interim final rule involving independent expenditure reporting. This was on our last agenda, so we've had a presentation and some discussion of the matter. Is there a desire for a presentation or further discussion? Council?
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. Before you is a draft interim final rule that would conform the commission's independent expenditure reporting regulation to the decisions of the district court and the DC circuit in Crew versus FEC. The regulation was found to be unlawful under the Administrative Procedure Act because it contained a phrase that substantially narrowed the statutory provision it was designed to implement. The draft interim final rule before you would strike the paragraph of the regulation that the court invalidated and would add a note stating that the statutory provision remains in effect. And if approved, we estimate that this interim final rule will take effect on September 30th. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Councillor. Colleagues? Any motions? Commissioner Busan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of draft interim final rule amending 11 CFR 109.1.10E16. As set forth in the agenda document number 22-19-A1. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much, Council. Thank you to my colleagues and especially to Commissioner Broussard. The next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2022-03, Democracy Engine LLC. We have Ms. Fillimer from the Office of General Counsel and Carol Lahan from Wiley Rye, who is counsel for the requesters, available to answer any questions. Counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good morning, commissioners.
Morning, Council.
Before you are agenda documents 22-20-A, 22-20-A1, and 22-20-B, alternate draft advisory opinions responding to a request from Democracy Engine LLC. The requester asks whether a corporation not operating through a separate segregated fund, or SSF, may use the requester's web platform to solicit and track contributions from members of a corporation's restricted class to federal candidates and political committees, and whether corporations and their separate segregated funds may use the requester's web platform to solicit and track contributions from the general public to federal candidates and political committees. All drafts conclude, one, that the proposed activity is not prohibited corporate facilitation when conducted by a separate segregated fund, two, that the proposal is not barred by the Act's prohibition on the sale or use of contributor data because the data would be obtained from Democracy Engine's records of payments it processes. And three, disclaimers are required on a customized page on the Democracy Engine platform available to the public. Draft A and revised draft A both conclude that a corporation not acting through an SSF may not use Democracy Engine's platforms to solicit members of the restricted class or general public, because Democracy Engine's corporate client would use the platform's contribution function to facilitate the making of contributions to candidates and political committees. Draft B concludes that a corporation not acting through an SSF may use Democracy Engine's platform to solicit members of the restricted class or the general public because Democracy Engine, not its corporate client, would provide the method of transmitting the contributions as a service to the individual contributors. We did not receive any comments on the draft. We received one comment on the request from the requesters, one comment on the draft from the requesters. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, is there any discussion or questions for council? Commissioner Cooksey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Get us started, since we have counsel for the requester here, I would be interested in Ms. Lamb's thoughts on the drafts. I understand she submitted some written comments this morning, or at least I received them this morning, but to whatever extent she wants to provide additional comments or provide information for the commission, I'd be interested in hearing it.
Thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to address the requests submitted on behalf of Democracy Engine. Specifically, I do want to address the facts. Draft B properly understood the facts, whereas Draft A and its revised version do not properly understand the facts. We believe it's this misunderstanding that led to the diverging opinions. The facts are as follows. A company or its PAC can buy software from Democracy Engine, which enables the company to create a branded website identifying the candidates the company hopes that its restricted class employees or the general public, if the communications directed to the general public, will support. The software will also enable the company to obtain real-time information on who's responded to the company's suggestion to contribute to candidates endorsed by the candidate. By the company. Thus, the company or its PAC will know how much is raised through its communications, either to the restricted class or to the general public without waiting for the information to become part of the public record. If an individual chooses to make a contribution or multiple contributions to candidates endorsed by the company, the individual will then contract with Democracy Engine in order to make the contributions, and will pay Democracy Engine a processing fee for its services. This service provided to individuals is fundamentally the same service approved by the Commission just last year in FEC Advisory Opinion 2021-07, PAC Management Services, and which the Commission explicitly said was not facilitation. Thus, Democracy Engine carefully conceived its offering to provide distinct services to the company and to the individuals making direct contributions to the candidates. And each party is paying for the services it receives. At no time does the company touch the money or underwrite in any way the making of the contributions. As a result, Draft B correctly understands that the company is not facilitating the making of any contributions. We therefore urge the commission to adopt Draft B, and we're available for any further questions.
Thank you, Council. Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that presentation. I guess I have a few questions to clarify some of the facts that were provided in your request and to compare the services provided by Democracy Engine with the services provided by platforms like ActBlue and WinRed that you cite in your comments today. So I guess my first question is, how is the Democracy Engine, the user interface for people who receive these messages from the corporation, how is it different than a contributor or a potential contributor just going to WinRed or ActBlue? Is it better for the contributor, or is it the same? Do they pay the same fees? How is the Democracy Engine page different or the same as those other platforms?
So as I understand it, the fundamental difference is that through ActBlue and WinRed, when read, you cannot contribute to multiple candidates at the same time. Whereas Democracy Engine allows you to check several boxes. If you want to contribute to five candidates, you can do that in a single transaction rather than five different transactions. So I think that's the fundamental difference in the between Democracy Engine and Act Blue or WinRed.
Commissioner Cook. Are the fees the same that the contributor is subject to, such as credit card fees or processing fees?
Well, the fees are in the ordinary course of business, and you've already approved Democracy Engine's fee structure, and presumably you've already approved the Act Blue and WinRed fee structure. So, I mean, it's commercially normal fees.
Mr. Chairman, can you explain in further detail what exactly the corporations are, how they're paying Democracy Engine? Is it just a fee for the establishment of the website, and then they have a link to it, and so it's a one-time payment, or how are payments made from the corporation to Democracy Engine?
I believe Democracy Engine initially pays an upfront fee for the establishment or for the purchase of the software, and then the company can create its own website based on what Democracy Engine has provided. But I don't think there are no ongoing fees for the service.
Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for some of the facts, but you made mention when you were comparing this to AdBlue or WinRed that a distinctive difference is that this would allow a contributor to give to multiple candidates at a single time, but those candidates are selected by the corporation. Is that correct?
Those are the candidates that would be, yes. The corporation is making a recommendation. They're not selected by the corporation. Corporation is making a recommendation that these are the individuals that we'd like you to contribute to, but the individuals are choosing whether or not to make the contributions. So if the corporation has, for instance, 10 candidates on its proposed list of endorsed candidates, an individual can choose to give to one or 10 or zero.
Or 11, but they can't go to 12 because you don't have 12 on there. You only have 11 or 10, whatever your number 10. Is. My yeah. point being is that they can only select what has been recommended by the corporation. Is that correct?
Those are the only ones available on the website. That's correct.
Thank you. Further question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. This one goes to where Commissioner Cooksey was headed towards. The corporation pays Democracy Engine for a fee for the service, but at all times, Democracy Engine is going to charge the customer the usual and normal rate for the fee. What is included in those costs for Democracy Engine? If you could explain that again. I know it's for a reasonable profit. No one is disputing that the structure has been consistent with others approved by the commission. But what exactly is paid by Democracy Engine, the corporation, and then what is paid by the individuals that are making contributions to the site?
So Democracy Engine charges the corporation for the software that enables the corporation to create a customized website that enables the corporation to identify the candidates who the corporation has endorsed. And on the back end, if an individual chooses to make a contribution, it allows the corporation to see in real time who has made contributions to the candidates. On the other hand, Democracy Engine charges the individuals for making the contributions. So if an individual chooses to make a contribution to the candidate, then the individual will be charged a processing fee consistent with the previous advisory opinion that the FEC gave to Democracy Engine. There's no change in how that part of the system works.
Commissioner Phipson.
I'm going to ask the question I asked earlier, but in a slightly different form. Is there any benefit to the contributor to use the Democracy Engine platform versus one of the larger competitors like InRed or ActBlue? Is there anything that's easier, better, simpler, or any reason a prospective contributor would prefer to use Democracy Engine over ActBlue or WinRed? Whether financial or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it, the benefit to the contributor is that they can make contributions to multiple candidates at the same time. I think that's it. I'm trying to see if there, I think there's any other differences here. It's just, that's it, you know. They can do it through the Democracy Engine function. They could do it through ActBlue. They could do it through WinRed. They all provide the same functionality to the contributor.
Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But the distinguishing thing is the same to the contributor, but it's really the corporation that we're looking at here, because the corporation is making the recommendations. The corporation also receives the benefit of then owning the data. Is that correct?
And I wasn't able to hear that exactly correct.
Then let me get closer to the mic. So we understand that the contributor gets the opportunity to select multiple individuals that are recommended by the corporation. Uh-huh. And you've already agreed to that. But then the corporation receives a real benefit because it gets to collect the data and owns the data relating to who made the corporation.
Well, pursuant to the FEC regulations, the corporation can make a communication to its restricted class on any subject whatsoever. And a corporation can endorse only certain candidates. And that's what's happening here. Well, it's endorsing certain candidates.
That wasn't a disagreement at all. I just want to confirm that the benefit seems to be weighing more for the corporate entities that purchase or go through Democracy Engine as opposed to the contributors. The contributors can only select what the corporation recommends.
The contributors select, yes, the candidates. I mean, they do or they don't, but... Mm-hmm. That's always the case with a communication of this sort.
Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you. I guess, you know, to sort of get down to brass tacks and looking at the relevant regulation, the issue seems to be how we analogize 114.2F to the internet, right? And 1.14.2F, Roman 2, prohibits providing materials for the purpose of transmitting or delivering contributions, such as stamps, envelopes, address to a candidate, political committee, other than the corporation or labor organization's SSF, or other similar items that would assist in transmitting or delivering contributions, but not including providing the address. And your argument is that Democracy Engine is basically an address aggregation collection service, right? It's creating a list of quote unquote addresses, web addresses or portals for you to make the contributions. And if the regulation contemplates providing address, obviously it probably contemplates some costs associated with collecting and categorizing and printing out a piece of paper with a list of addresses that you could give to prospective contributors. What I'm trying to understand is there anything else to the contributors that is being provided that is lowering the transaction costs for them making these contributions? Are they getting, are their fees subsidized? Is it a better, easier interface? Are there other things that are making them have a better, easier, simpler, cheaper experience than if, for example, the corporation just sent them an email with a list of WinRed links or ActBlue links or whatever the case may be? So if no, any information you can clarify on that would be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, there is no, there's no underwriting of the cost to the contributor. It's not going to be cheaper to the contributor to do that. They're going to pay the same fees they would pay if they went to the Democracy Engine site or if they went to any other site that is a processing site, which is what Democracy Engine is doing for these contributors. They're processing a direct contribution to a candidate. So they're not getting a cheaper fee because they're using the Democracy Engine site.
Sure. I guess I'd like to ask policy whether they agree with that characterization or whether they, what if any benefit they think is being provided to the prospective contributors through the creation of these Democracy Engine, you know, websites, customized websites for the corporation.
So I think that the benefit to the contributor is the same as the benefit of any web processing service to make contributions. I'll let the requesters council clarify. They might also say that they're providing an informational service to the contributors and that to the extent the contributor wants to know who the corporation endorses and wants to make contributions to those individuals, that's a distinct service that they're getting here. Obviously, that's also a service to the corporation.
A clarifying question then, if a corporation prints out a list of addresses for political committees and says, these are addresses of political committees that we support if you want to send them contributions. Is that corporate facilitation?
No.
Thanks.
Thank you, colleagues. Further questions? I have one. I've followed this discussion with interest. One of the downsides of being chair is you kind of have to step back for a second. But my remaining question goes to something that Commissioner Broussard alluded to, which is the owning of the data on a back end. And I guess my question is that just part of the provision of the data in real time to the corporation? Is that part of the software license, or is there additional marginal cost to the corporation and benefit to benefit to your client from the provision of that information?
I believe it's part of the software license that the company is paying for. And I'd also like to mention that both ActBlue and WinRed, to my understanding, allow the real-time data as well. So this is all already a functionality that's being provided by these other services.
Thank you. Colleagues? Well, I just lost my screen. So if anyone is dialing in remotely is seeking recognition, they may want you to do so vocally.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you. Can we have these two divergent advisory opinions for you, what is the effect of us having a split vote 3-3 on each of those or on one of those? What effect does that have for you?
I mean, a 3-3 opinion is that neither one is been adopted by the commission. I mean, there's really not much more to it than that.
You know? Perfect. So given that we got your comment, I didn't get your comments until literally minutes before we came on. And I appreciate the presentation that you've given this morning, but and policy can give me the exact date, but I know we need to get you an answer soon. Would you mind giving us a little more time in order to get to a consensus answer for you instead of having these two divergent answers?
Well, yes, I don't mind giving you additional time. My client, I had checked with my client beforehand in the event that you were going to ask for that. And we can give you additional time to come up with a consensus opinion. But we do believe that draft B accurately represents the facts and provides the correct analysis. And we'd urge you to adopt draft B at this time.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks to counsel for remarkable foresight. Is there any further discussion, motions, or requests?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Cooksey.
If counsel's amenable, I would ask to hold this over and for a policy to seek an appropriate extension.
I would support that request. Counsel, how much time's on the clock?
So the current deadline is June 14th. So would you like us to ask for a 2-week extension?
We will endeavor to get you an answer by our next meeting, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your attendance. Appreciate it. It's one of the better parts of the job. The next matter. Thank you again. Thank you to OGC. Next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2020-04. Bill Stein, President. Mr. Wen there. And I believe we have counsel in this matter as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda document 2221A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by the Jill Stein for President Committee. The requester is the principal campaign committee for Dr. Jill Stein, a candidate for the Green Party nomination for president in 2016. The committee asked various questions concerning the use of committee funds raised after the general election in 2016 to pay outstanding administrative fines to the commission or to make repayments to the United States Treasury. The draft concludes that the committee need not establish a separate segregated account to raise funds designated as other receipts to pay administrative fines. The committee may not raise funds designated as primary contributions to pay administrative fines. And the committee may use funds designated as primary contributions to make repayments to the United States Treasury. We received no comments on the request or the draft, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, counsel. Colleagues, my apologies. I've been derelict in not thanking Dr. Stein and the committee's counsel, Mr. Kresge, for their attendance and pointing out that Mr. Kresge is available to answer any questions. Is there any discussion or questions for requester's counsel or the Office of General Counsel? Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you very much, and thanks to OGC for the presentation. I have a couple questions for the requester with respect to question two and the question about primary contributions being used to pay administrative fines. Request, and excuse me while I pull this up, the request states that, or it describes contributions that were being designated as primary contributions, and I believe in being used to pay for legal and administrative costs. Can you say more about these contributions? Well, I think I'm confused about the characterization of them as primary contributions, given the timeline we're on and how those contributions are being used or collected or designated.
Mr. Kresge, I believe you're muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
But the designation as primary was essentially based on advice of the report analyst for the FEC, who directed the campaign to designate the contributions and the funds as either general or primary election. So we chose to designate them as primary simply for that reason, because we had to designate them as something. The funds are primarily used for ongoing administrative costs, to pay administrative fines and so on. So the designation doesn't, in our view, limit their use to paying for the primary, but was simply a designation that was, we were directed to make, and we're given a choice between either general election or primary.
I can add, yeah, thank you. I can add to that, since I'm involved in the filing of reports in the past year and a half or so. And as Mr. Kresge said, we were explicitly advised by the reports department that when a campaign raises funds in the post-election period, because clearly it's not primary and it's not the general election, yet for the purpose of adhering to the cumulative limit for any given contributor, all donations need to be assigned to the same election period. And we were told it was basically a dealer's choice as to which one to choose. And since our activity at this period is largely with regard to ensuring compliance with the federal election law and with FECA and the commission regulations related to the audit and questions surrounding repayment and so on, that it would be appropriate to call them primary as opposed to general. And the costs themselves largely are that. They are our legal costs, and they are also the costs of filing, because the software, we use a private software company, the free software FECFile does not work for us, and we need to pay a private software company to assist with the filings. So that is essentially the costs that we need to fundraise for, and those are considered on a somewhat arbitrary basis primary.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a clarifying question, which primary are you designating, which election year are you designating them for?
That's a very good question, because it's, shall we say, not usual for a campaign to be operative 6 years after an election. This is for the election of 2016. And there was substantial delay in part in our request for an administrative hearing at the time that our audit was completed, and that was in June of 2019. The audit was completed in April of 2019, and we requested a hearing according to the deadline by June of 2019, but because the commission lost quorum essentially for a period of 15 months, starting a couple months after that, there were a whole series of delays in the process, which is why we come to be figuring this out and seeking clarity on the nature of our compliance, how to come into compliance, and whether there are repayment costs that we will be paying. So all this is still in process, and that is what we need to raise money in order to sustain that process.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, first, Dr. Stein, I'll say that a committee being active 6 years after its last election may be more common than you realize, but I would be interested in OGC's assessment or response to what we've heard from the committee about their choice of designating contributions and whether they could have designated them for a different election.
Well, we cannot comment on the past action of what, how these were designated or what they may have been told by RAD. One thing to note, however, is that if the commission, if the committee does have net debts outstanding from the primary election, which it seems like they do, under this advisory opinion, they could use those primary contributions for those net debts outstanding. That also includes for the debt repayment program, the debt repayment payments. So in terms of future looking, as far as this advisory opinion is concerned, and not looking back at past action of what the contributions were designated as, under this advisory opinion, we could still use these primary contributions for those net debts outstanding and for the debt repayment. And it seems to us that those payments, those expenses still exist.
Thank you, Council. Colleagues, any further discussion? Are there any motions? Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to draft advisory opinion 2022-04, Jill Stein for President Committee, I move approval of agenda document number 22-21-A, which is draft A.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much to Council and the requester for their attendance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will move to the proposed final audit report on Mike Brown for Indiana, number A19-02, which has been held over from a previous meeting of the agenda. Mr. Krogan?
Mr. Chairman?
Please take us away, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and commissioners. Before you is the proposed final audit report of the audit division on Mike Braun for Indiana, which circulated to the commission on May 13th. The findings consist of finding one, misstatement of financial activity, finding two, failure to file 48-hour notices, finding three, disclosure of occupation and or name of employer, finding four, receipt of apparent prohibited contributions, loans, and finding five, disclosure of memo entries and candidate loans. The additional issues consist of issue one, receipt of contributions in excess of the limit, and issue two, prohibited candidate personal loan repayments. We are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Colleagues? Mr. Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an unusual audit. I cannot recall another instance where we had a situation audit. There was a Supreme Court opinion that was pending that had the potential to affect one of the findings, one of the proposed findings. And I completely understand that my colleagues were exceedingly sensitive to not tread on either the possibility of that Supreme Court opinion coming down or the existing district court opinion that addressed these issues and was not stayed at the time that we considered the ADRM. But subsequent to the ADRM, we received an analysis from the audit division, which the commission did not have in front of us at the time. We didn't have this detailed breakdown, which I have put before the commission as an agenda document today. We didn't have this detailed breakdown that the audit division has prepared that lays out what the actual impact of the, at that time, the expected cruise decision, which has now become the actual cruise decision, what the impact of that would be on this particular proposed finding on excessive contributions. And as it turns out, there are $732,429 in excessive contributions remaining after the cruise issue is completely taken off the table. So without intruding in any way on that decision and acknowledging that decision, there's still $732,429 in excessive contributions. And as I said, we didn't have the details at the time of the ADRM. We didn't have the breakdown of the dollar figure. And I think because of that unusual situation, we should at this point include a finding on those excessive contributions. I think it would be irresponsible to ignore over $700,000 in excessive contributions. So although it is, I acknowledge it is unusual to be making a motion to add a finding at this point in the process. I've checked with our lawyers and they tell us it's it is permissible to do so. I've checked with our auditors and I encourage them to weigh in. I believe they would support adding this finding. So at the appropriate time, I am going to make a motion to try to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you. This question for counsel. This proposal by Commissioner Weintraub to add a finding at this point, has the Braun Committee or anybody associated with it had the opportunity to review it? Or do we have any? Would we have any comments from them? Have they been able to check the math and the numbers associated with it? And would that be appropriate for us to do at this time?
I'm not aware that the proposed motion has been presented to the Braun Committee. I would ask Jessica or Larry to weigh in on the additional.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Council.
Thank you. I would note that I don't understand that they, I believe that they were forwarded the document that was made public. I also would note that the substance of the motion that is being discussed, the potential motion, was it's in essence a subpart of what had previously been proposed finding five, which had also been forwarded to the committee at the earlier stage.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Mr. Traynor.
So we don't have any specific response from the committee, and we don't have any specific information where they've had an opportunity to review this particular document. How much time have they been given?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
The committee would not normally be given an opportunity to respond even at the ADRM stage. And so they were not given an opportunity to respond now, but they would not be normally given such an opportunity.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, let's take people in order. Ms. Brown?
Oh, please, I'll defer to Rakita, although I'm sure we were going to say the same thing.
Ms. Morcombe? Let's make some Thank effort you. To use last names in an open meeting of a federal commission.
My apologies, Commissioner.
No worries. It's a friendly habit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we did provide the committee with this document as soon as we realized it will be made blue so that they had an opportunity to see it. We have not heard any response from the committee on this document.
And when did we provide that to them?
Mr. Chairman?
Please go ahead, Ms. Walker.
If I may, Mr. Krogan, are you able to provide that exact date? I do believe it was sometime last week, but we can look up that exact date for you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Weintraub, while we're waiting for Mr. Krogan.
I'll defer to audit, but I'm pretty sure the topic of excessive contributions was discussed with the Braun Committee during the course of the audit, was it not?
Mr. Chairman.
Like on record. Go ahead, Ms. Markham.
Yes, it was discussed with them. And also, I have the date we sent the document to the committee on Friday, June 3rd at 7:19 a.m.
A follow-up, if I may. I understand the excessive contribution finding was obviously discussed. Was this particular breakdown in light of the Cruz litigation discussed? My memory is the position of audit was that the litigation was irrelevant. Go ahead.
No, we did not discuss the exact breakdown that's in this document, but it's the same process of the documents that we looked at, the same approach of determining the excessive amount. So the, in essence, the number, the 898,000 number was there, that was there presented at the ADRM stage. And this just breaks down to reduce that amount. So the concept was there, the finding was there. Now the committee has this particular breakdown.
Just to be sure I'm clear, this particular breakdown was not presented as part of the earlier audit process. And the first notice that the committee received of this document was last Friday.
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
That is correct, sir. Friday was when they saw this particular document, but it's all the same information with the exception of the amount being reduced.
Except not the specific breakdown that's present on this document, right?
Mr. Chairman, with this amount of 732, that is correct. So the ADRM did not include the $732,000.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Traynor.
So with the previous finding that we excluded, what was the committee's response to that particular finding then, if we're relying upon the fact that, that they previously responded?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Ms. Workham.
So the committee for the assessive find, what we had as the assessive finding, which is not an additional issue, at the time the committee did provide some documentation, but the committee did state that the previous treasurer did not properly follow procedures in sending out the letters that were needed. When the newer treasurer came aboard in 2019, the committee stated that treasurer did start sending out some of the forms. So that was the explanation provided, which is also, of course, in the ADRM.
Thank you.
Colleagues, further questions? I have one. It's a general question to probably the Office of General Counsel, but expertise can answer. I take Commissioner Weintraub's point that this is an unusual situation, and I accept that the Office of General Counsel has informed us that with four votes, we can do what we wish, which is pretty constant advice around here. My question is, where in Directive 70, which is supposed to govern this process, is it anticipated or contemplated that the commission will resurrect a finding at this stage in our process? I read it last night and I didn't see it, but maybe someone can point me to it.
Mr. Chairman?
Please, Ms. Salingoff.
I do not believe that Directive 70 goes into that level of detail. There are a lot of aspects of more unusual audit processes that are not specifically covered in Directive 70, but that Directive 70 in operation with other directives regarding the four vote that you just mentioned would be how the less typical audit might proceed.
Yeah, and I respect the fact this is a less typical audit, which is an excellent turn of phrase. I mean, here's at least what I saw in Directive 70. And to preview, I understand that we may, by four votes to the commission, disregard our procedures, but I'm unlikely to do so, especially given the notice point that Commissioner Traynor has already pointed out. But
at the bottom of page 3 of Directive 70, it notes that we take a vote on the BFAR, which I believe we've done. And then there is the draft that is circulated consistent with the vote of the commission. I'm quoting there from the directive. So it seems to me we've taken a vote that we have something that's been sent around consistent with the vote of the commission. It does not include this, I don't want to characterize it, that's somewhat unfair to the argument, but it doesn't include this unusual procedure. And accordingly, it doesn't seem to me contemplated or really consistent with principles of due process and notice, or frankly, the commission having enough time to consider an unusual maneuver, given just along with the Directive 70 itself. So again, if someone wants to point me to something in our procedures and directive that contemplates this, I'm open to it. But if it's a back of the envelope, somewhat last minute effort to take a position that was not suggested during the audit, where again, the position, as I recall, was that the stay of the regulation by a federal district court was irrelevant. I'm open to granular argument on that point.
Mr. Chairman?
Please, Ms. Selnikoff.
I would suggest that Directive 70 at the bottom of page 4 that addresses approval of the final audit report, which is what will happen if the, you know, what we're trying to get to today, that if it says that if the PFAR is approved by tally, then it will be made into the FAR, but if not, it will be placed on an agenda. And I think that although Directive 70 does not specify that the commission's normal rules in its conduct of open meetings on for such agenda items applies, I would argue that it's inherent within that language that they do. And so I think that because there must be a vote at that point, once it does not pass on tally, that the normal process involved, including amendments, would be appropriate.
Fair enough. I read it as preserving the commission's prerogatives and creating the somewhat unusual fact that we have to do this in an open meeting, although I'm sure the public is entranced by this discussion. So I take your point that it provides for an opportunity for commission review, but I don't see in this language an anticipation that a previous vote to move something to the additional issues, which is all we're talking about here, would be resurrected. I understand we have that power. I'm just not seeing it anticipated in the directive. Mr. Calvert?
Mr. Chairman, I'd add, I think in a way you and Ms. Selnikoff are both right. It was not anticipated, I think, at the time of Directive 70. Directive 70 was a 12th floor, then 9th floor product. So I have limited insight into exactly what was anticipated, but I think it was anticipated pretty clear. It's anticipated in the ordinary course, the commission would make its substantive findings at the ADRM stage, and the PFAR would then follow on as incorporating the decisions made at ADRM. Having said that, I agree completely with Ms. Selnikoff that directive does provide that the PFAR, if objected to, comes on the agenda. And because it doesn't say that you must then take an up or down vote, it's not as detailed as what happens, what the options are, as Directive 70 is at the ADRM stage. But I read that as basically defaulting to the general parliamentary rule that it's a document before the commission is open to amendment.
I appreciate that, sir. And to be clear, I don't think that any such motion would be out of order. I just believe it is unwise on the merits. Pausing for further discussion among my clients or questions. Sorry, clients, colleagues. Old Freudian slip. Are there any motions? Maybe one that was previewed. Commissioner Weintraub?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll just say in support of the motion that during the audit, the auditors, I believe, discussed with the committee more excessives than this, about a little bit under 200,000 were taken off the table by the Cruz decision. But the bulk of these excessives were not affected, were never affected by the Cruz decision. So I don't think that the committee would be surprised to discover that these excessives were out there. Their response seems to have been that their treasurer was sloppy. That happens, but we're still looking at over $700,000 in excessive contributions that it seems like the commission is prepared to ignore. And I would urge us not to do that. Having said that, I will now move regarding the audit of Mike Braun for Indiana, A19-02. I move that the commission find that the committee received $732,429 in excessive contributions from individuals as detailed by the audit division in agenda document 22-23-A, and that finding be included in the commission's final audit report.
Thank you, Commissioner. Discussion of the motion, Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner Weintraub, for the motion. I will be supporting the motion, but I wanted to draw our attention to the DFAR because I think there's a page 26 of it that kind of gives us already the indication that this committee is aware that we will need to address the outstanding funds. And I'm reading from it, but it's page 26 in the DFAR. MDFI also stated, to the extent that the facts and conclusions in finding five relate to the $250,000 loan repayment limit found in Section 403 of the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2002, BCRA, and 28 U.S.C. Section 2884 of the Committee's Acceptance of Debt Retirement Contributions, the Audit Division should amend this finding in light of a recent decision of the federal court regarding the validity of the provisions of law on which the Audit Division is relying on. So this is essentially the committee acknowledging that the Cruz decision has impacted on of the $250,000 portion, but they acknowledge that there is a remaining funds in the bed that should be amended. This is the effort that Commissioner Weintraub put before.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further discussion of the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Traynor.
So, Mr. Chairman, I won't be supporting the motion, and the reason why is I think that when the commission decides to take a unique step, I think we have to be particularly careful about what level of due process we give the individual participants in front of the commission. Here we have a last-minute motion to resurrect something that the commission's already voted on. The audit division put this thing out, gave this to the respondents in this particular case on June the 3rd, and here we are a few days later voting on it, and we were told that we didn't get any response from the committee. I don't even know that the committee knows that they could give a response. My sense is that they received it and they don't have any idea that they could in fact respond to it. And now for us to rely upon comments that were made to a previous document with different numbers and to squint and glean and pull information out to say, well, they've already responded to this, let's move forward, I don't think is the appropriate level of consideration that we should give to the respondents. And therefore, I won't be supporting the motion.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Directive 70 is available on the agency's website and does not say anything that precludes a committee from taking the initiative to submit something. Do we have any reason from our audit staff to indicate that they told the committee that we don't want to hear from them anymore? In the past, we've had committees take that own initiative on their own. We don't have to tell them they can do it.
That was a question. We would like to take it.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Brown.
We don't have any such indication from the committee.
Let me ask the follow-up. Was there any communication at all aside from simply sending the document? Did we hear back? Were there conversations?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that we heard back from the committee, but I would like to confirm that with Ms. Markham.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Markham?
No, we have not. And each time we communicate with the committee, when the PFAR or any other reports are going to go on a public record, we reach out, we inform the committee, we follow up if we don't hear back from the committee, as happened in this case, when we informed the committee that the PFAR was going to be on the last agenda, and we followed up the next day to make sure they did receive it and they did acknowledge it. So we do have an open communication with the committee. If we don't hear anything, we follow up the committee. And in this case, we, after we sent the document, there was no further communication.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Sort of a general point. I will not be supporting the motion for largely the procedural reasons I've already given, but procedural errors or infirmities have substantive results. And one of the results here is that, this argument was first presented live at an open meeting where we adopted the position that we're being asked to unwind today. This document has not been public long. And I will say, honestly, we are being asked to make a finding of excess contributions down to the single dollar amount based on statistical sampling with a fairly large range in the confidence interval that I haven't had a chance to properly vet. And I am uncomfortable, partially because of the timing, partially because of the response points that Commissioner Traynor has made, and partially because I don't have good visibility on how we have decided to redo our statistical sampling in this matter. And I'm therefore very uncomfortable voting for such a granular finding, especially given Commissioner Weintraub's interpretation of that finding. So for those reasons, I think this is a lamentable situation in that if there had been an earlier effort to engage with the fact that our regulation had been enjoined, we may be having a different conversation, but we're not. Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There seems some reticence to because of the possibility of lack of time. Do we have additional time? I'm more than happy to make a request to hold it over so that we can get the opportunity to walk through these numbers if there is interest.
I appreciate the invitation, but I think that should have been done at the IIR stage. Any further discussion? Mr. Weintraub.
Mr. Chairman, I want to point out that in the document that audit provided and that I made blue, there is $380,900 in excessive contributions that are not a matter of sampling, that the audit division actually documented that amount. They laid eyes on that amount of excessive contributions. So I guess my question is, if your concern is with sampling, which the commission has used in its audit procedures for decades, but if you are now concerned about what the commission has been doing for decades in the sampling arena, what about the $380,900 that we absolutely know it's not a matter of sampling? The audit division has seen those excessives and analyzed the underlying data. So I'm gonna ask for a vote on my motion anyway, but if that fails, would there be any interest in moving forward on the $380,900, or is the sampling issue just a red herring?
Well, it's certainly not a red herring, but I appreciate the usual kindness to colleagues and the suggestion. My objection is very simple. It's that there is a process for this. That process should have taken account of a binding unstayed order of a district court. It didn't.
And these arguments are being made live at open meetings rather than being properly routed. And it is unfair to respondents to do this live at the table like this. This isn't the way, in my view, a federal agency should be handling matters that, from certain perspectives, are multi-hundred-thousand-dollar violations. I am bothered by the cavalier approach to what is being portrayed as a serious problem. If it's a serious problem, it should be addressed seriously. And this isn't that. Mr. Trainer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo those concerns. We were told at the previous open meeting about this particular issue when the discussion came up about the unstayed order that the impact of the regulation was irrelevant to the outcome of this particular audit. And now it seems that it's very relevant to this particular audit, so much so that we're backing out the $250,000 and now we're trying to figure out what the right number is associated with it. I think what was at the previous hearing on this, when we discussed the unstayed order, it was an open invitation to discuss what the right number might be and what the appropriate direction we should go is. And I agree wholeheartedly with the chairman that we can't now do this at the table and just say, okay, you don't agree with this number, let's come up with a different number. I don't think that that's an appropriate process. And I think it's unfortunate that we're even having this discussion when we could have done a very detailed analysis prior to this.
Mr. Weintraub?
Sorry, I'm doing this on my phone and it's not always easy to find the unmute button.
Well done
thank you, Mr. Chairman. This issue was generally raised at the earlier discussion. And by the way, people keep calling them respondents. They're not respondents. They're a committee that's been audited. There's no enforcement action here under discussion. This is an audit. This issue that there was included within the recommended excessive contribution amount, some of the amount was affected by, would potentially be affected by the cruise litigation, but some wouldn't. That issue was discussed at the earlier juncture and my colleagues were really uninterested in parsing it out. That was, the fact that there was still a lot of money that would be left excessive even after the cruise litigation. I didn't have the exact numbers at the time. The audit division had an estimate and I respect that my colleagues didn't want to work off of an estimate, but this to suggest that this has never been raised before and this is some last minute issue that nobody has had a chance to think about, I think that is not accurate.
Thank you. Further discussion? All in favor of Commissioner Weintraub's motion?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion fails with 3 in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Broussard, and 3 opposed, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Cooksey, and myself. Are there additional motions? Commissioner Weintraub?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm having a little technical difficulty here. Hang on. Mr. Chairman, I would like this the discussion that we have just had to be reflected in the additional issues section of the audit. I suggest that this could be accomplished by at the end of part 5, additional issues, issue 1. We could add an additional paragraph that would read, on June 8th, 2022, the commission considered a motion to include a finding that the committee received $732,429 in excessive contributions from individuals that remained after fully taking into account the cruise decision. The commission did not approve by the required 4 votes this proposed finding. So I would like to make a motion to include that under additional issues.
Any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails with three in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Broussard, and three opposed, myself, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Cooksey. Further motions?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Traynor.
I would move to adopt audit's recommendations.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you all very much. Mr. Staff Director, are there any administrative matters requiring the commission's attention this morning?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
Thank you very much, sir. This meeting is adjourned.